Welcome to the Pussy Parlor Podcast. I am your host, Kitty Velour. I am a pole dance artist, glittery showgirl, and a pole dance and floor work instructor. Here at the parlor, I interview new guests each week, including pole dancers, strippers, showgirls, sex workers, and cabaret creatures of all kinds. Our parlor guest today is Gemma Rose, a pole dancer, stripper, and sex worker activist. Drawing from her performance background and stripping experience, Gemma is most passionate about helping students connect with their own sexuality through empowering techniques. Her goal is not only to spread her stripper magic far and wide, but also to help educate and reform the pole world, mobilizing allies to respect and support the founders of our industry. In this episode, we change up a little bit and we talk through different kinds of stripper terminology, from lap dance to table dance to private dance, and describe what all these things mean to us from our own personal experiences as strippers. And we also talk about stripper rights and advocacy. Gemma recently had her Instagram account at Gemma Rose Pole deleted. So please help her get her account back, because for independent artists, we rely on Instagram and our profiles there as not only our portfolios, but as our way of advertising and reaching our clients and customers. And years and years and years of work goes into creating a following on Instagram. So to have that deleted, all those videos, those posts just gone that you might have worked a really long time on, choreographing, editing, is just devastating and heartbreaking. So please help Gemma get her account back. And what you need to do is go on to Instagram and go to your settings, press help, then select report a problem, and then select something isn't working, and then type in the box, I can't find at Gemma Rose Pole, which is GEMMARosePOLE, and then press submit. I will also put instructions in the show notes below so you can follow there as well and help report this problem so that hopefully the account can be reinstated. If you are listening to this way, way in the future, I hope that Gemma has her account back and you might not need to do anything, but it'll be really, really helpful if you could do that for us. Anyway, now we're going into the episode. It's an extra long and juicy one, so I hope you enjoy it and you learn something. Welcome to the Pussy Parlor, Gemma.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
How would you describe yourself to someone who doesn't know who you are?
So, can I call myself a stripper anymore? It's like, because of the pandemic, it's been a year, but usually I am a stripper. I'm also a pole dance instructor or sexy movement coach, and I very much pride myself on my sex work, activism work as well. So a whole range of things there. Oh, and I model. There's a lot of things I do. It's a whole thing.
And how did you first get into pole dancing?
So I've been dancing all my life, ever since I was a little tot. I've been doing like ballet and modern and contemporary. But I got to the point when I was about, I was doing my A-levels, and just the stress, like anybody that's been to a ballet class, especially as a child, like the pressure that they put you under is pretty insane. And I just got to the point with like all my exams going on that it was just too much and I wanted to quit. I was done with it. I wanted to leave, but I didn't want to stop dancing entirely. And coincidentally, there was a pole studio literally next door to my ballet studio. And I just thought, yeah, I fancy that. I'll give that a go. And I did. I was 17. So, yeah.
Amazing. Yeah, I think I had the same kind of thing when I was looking for something to a way to learn to dance. And then when you find pole, you're like, well, this is better than everything else.
Literally. It was so nice because, like, in the dance studio I was at, I was treated like a child and not really respected as an adult, even though, I was still technically a child. I was still 17, but, you know, I just wanted that kind of feeling of getting independence and being treated more like an adult. And it was such a different environment walking into a pole studio. I felt so respected as a person and as an adult. And I was just like, oh, this is so much more of a nurturing environment for what I need at this stage in my life.
How did you get into stripping? Where did that come into your journey?
So that came about 3 years into my pole journey. I didn't know anything about strippers or sex workers or strip clubs, or I didn't know anything. I moved to university. I started kind of my first proper job at McDonald's. And I hated it. It was just horrendous. I was like, it's called customer care. So like you're a cleaning lady, basically. So I'm cleaning up after people in the toilets and everything. And it was just, obviously it's minimum wage as well. And I was just like, this really sucks. And one day my mum just spoke to me and she was like, Gemma, why don't you just strip? Why don't you do that? So it's my mum that actually suggested that I become a stripper, which I just love.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And I was just like, Mum, you're onto something. And so I did. I was like, fuck McDonald's. I'm leaving that place. And so I started stripping while studying. Before I got into stripping and knowing what the strip club environment is like, same as my mum, she thought it was just spinning round a pole and doing pole tricks, and it was all to do with pole. Same as I thought, actually. I don't think she quite knew about the whole lap dancing situation, and if she would have suggested it to me, she knew about that. But she's really, really cool. She's really open-minded about that stuff, and yeah, she like wholly supports me in my job and doing that. But yeah, I think it's really cool that she was like, yeah, that's something you should maybe do instead of your happy job at McDonald's. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, good thinking, Mum.
Yeah, good Mum.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that before, or if you're not in the world of stripping, everyone has this perception of what stripping is from movies and music videos, and it's always the glamorized element of it. There's always pole dancing involved, but you know, that's actually such a small part of what the job is that we've spoken about before.
Yeah.
And I think it would be really cool if we could clarify that pole dance isn't synonymous with stripping.
Yeah.
And I thought we could do a full breakdown for our listeners as to the different terminology and what each things mean, or what we think they mean anyway.
Yes.
We can have a discussion about it. Yeah. So the first one, how would you define pole dancing?
Pole dancing, anything with a vertical metal bar, any movement with that. Really, whether it's flow or tricks, I still think that comes under pole dance because of the whole history of it. And, you know, you're not just doing a trick, you're doing transitions in and out of tricks, and that creates like the illusion of movement and dance. So, yeah, I think it's like a really broad spectrum with pole dance. It's, yeah.
Yeah, I think, it's just anyone that's dancing around a vertical vertical pole, basically. But pole dancing is just the movement. It doesn't really necessarily involve exchange of money. You can do it in a way that's as a hobby, as a hobbyist, or you can do it in a way that's paid as well. And then you can also do it in a way that's really, really sexual, or in a way that's not sexual at all and is just more sport or gymnastic based. So it can come in a variety of flavors.
Absolutely. It's such a rainbow and spectrum, and it's wonderful. That's why we love it, right? Because it's got all this room for exploration and development and growth. And I think that's why a lot of us love pole so much, because it can be whatever you want it to be, really.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I think it's, we call it pole dance as well, because it's the dancing element is what's really taking it out of the strip clubs. And I don't know whether people who do Chinese pole refer to it as dance as well, or whether it'd be more circus.
I think then it's more circus rather than
dance. I would think so as well. They would describe themselves as like a Chinese pole artist, I think, is generally what they say that they do. And, you know, all of the pole studios are called pole dance studios. So, and that's why we have metal poles. Otherwise, we'd have like wooden poles, or what are Chinese poles made out of? Is it rubber?
Chinese is rubber. Indian is wood. Wooden.
Yeah. Yeah. But we all have metal poles in our studio. So that's a really easy indicator to see where it comes from.
Yeah.
I think that takes us into, what does stripping mean? What does that mean? How do we define that?
I think that really depends on what part of the world you come from and what strip clubs are like in your country, or even like on an individual basis. I think when most people stripping, it's just taking your clothes off. That's literally what it means, right? It's to shed layers and peel clothes off of your skin. And I think a lot of, there is definitely crossover between like stripping and pole dancing. Like strippers may dance on a pole and strip at the same time and take their clothes off. Or it may be, you know, in a lap dance room where strippers are taking their clothes off again. So, but yeah, like...
stripping is a bit of a tricky one, actually, because I think it could also be in reference to like burlesque as well.
I was just thinking
You know, some people who are burlesque performers describe themselves as strippers, and definitely in the era of burlesque, like 1930s to 1950s, performers would describe themselves as strippers. But interestingly, burlesque, when you think of what the image that comes to mind when you say burlesque as well, is like a stripper, but like in a more kind of like, yes, ornate beaded costume, who's taking off gloves and has tassels or something like that.
Yeah.
Burlesque actually used to just mean a comedy. It's like to make fun of, to parody. Oh. And it used to be more of a comic show, and you were always kind of making the fun out of something. And then they brought the strippers in to kind of make it more interesting, so people would keep coming to the theaters, and they wouldn't like go elsewhere. But then the strippers just took over the burlesque scene, burlesque became synonymous with stripper. That's just another example of how things change and how there's a lot of crossovers. I think a similar thing has happened kind of now with stripping and pole dance, even though not all strippers pole dance and not all pole dancers strip.
Yes, very true.
We just might be confusing people more with all these different definitions, but I think it's good to be specific about what it means and in what context things are happening, basically. Stripping, to strip off clothes, to take off clothes in some format, traditionally, I think in a modern sense, in a strip club, but you know, different kinds of performers might consider themselves strippers if they're taking off clothes as well.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because I don't know, like burlesque divas calling themselves strippers, like they are stripping, but to call yourself a stripper just means something so specific that I feel like it can only be really linked to a strip club space. That word has so much weight, and it's like all the stigma that comes with that word as well, whereas burlesque artists don't necessarily have the same stigma attached to them. I'm not saying that the stigma defines the word as such, but it's just an interesting thing to consider, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I totally get what you mean. I think a burlesque dancer using the word stripper can use it and not have to deal with as much backlash, but burlesque is basically just more old school stripping, really. So it's all part of like the same timeline, the same history. It's just a more old-fashioned way of doing it. Yeah. It's funny though, because I love to read about burlesque history, and like a lot of the burlesque dancers, when go-go dancing came in the 60s, and that's kind of when pole dancing started to come in, they hated it. They thought it was disgusting.
Really?
yeah, because they felt pushed out, and
they
felt like all these women dancing topless and like swinging around like monkeys on poles. They just thought it was horrible.
So
it's really funny. Yeah, because there's always like a snobbery between different workers, and that's was always the way then, and I think now we can be a bit more open-minded, and even from our generation things might change to the next one.
Yeah,
and things might be different, and we're gonna be reminiscing about our time, so it's just it's just the way things go. Going on to the next term, stripper style. What does stripper style mean?
Again, it's like different countries, it means, you know, different things. I think when people think of stripper style, for me, when that word pops up, I want to think like what's going on in American strip clubs with the big pole shows and everything. I think that's what a lot of people tend to jump to. But like, for me, UK stripper style, I'm doing air quotes here. For me, that's lap dance. That's, you know, the very limited pole show that you may get, but it's really not about that. And for me, in a lot of the clubs that I've worked at, it's a real focus on slow and sensual titillating movement rather than like twerk or bounce or something like that. That, again, I think we might associate with big show clubs and urban clubs in the US as well. That's just my perspective, because, like, you know, that's just how I do my stripper style. Like, that I very much focus on the slow and sensual side of it. I'm not saying that that's all of the UK, but it's like, I think what people think is stripper style is very different to the reality. And there's such a broad spectrum, and it's kind of hard to define. But definitely in the UK, there's so much more of a focus on that one-to-one private dance than like a big show in front of people. Like, you know, we make our money in the private rooms. So yeah, stripper style is really about like undulating, teasing movement for me.
Yeah, definitely. I think that does come into American stripper style as well, if you wanted to have an umbrella term for them both. It's definitely got that tease elements that we bring to dance. And what I try to share with students as well is that stripper style is in the style of a stripper, but it doesn't mean to be a stripper.
That's, you can do stripper style.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a stripper to do it.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's a misconception that when we dance stripper style, we are being strippers somehow, or that what we do now, we can dance in stripper style, we can be, go and be strippers. Mm-hmm. And that's not really how it works. It's not really, especially like what you said, it's more private dance based. And unless you're doing a lap dance class, you're generally not learning to give a private dance to someone.
Exactly.
It's different, yeah.
So stripper style in class is just different to what that means in a club context, really. And that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think it's interesting that in the UK, the stripper style is more a private dance based, or that the clubs, it's more VIPs, more one-on-one based, whereas in the US, it's more stage based, because we did get lap dancing from there anyway. We didn't have that before. We used to be all stage based.
Yeah.
Like, even the White Horse was stage based in London until 2011. I think it was one of the later ones to turn. So we actually got that from America.
Yeah.
But then now it's kind of different. So I find that quite interesting as well. But I think it's just the tipping culture, and that really would incentivize and motivate you to go and do some cool stuff on the stage and on the pole if you know that you're going to get some money thrown at you.
I would put way more effort into my stage shows in a strip club if I knew that I was going to be compensated correctly for it. You're just not in the UK. You're just not. I think that's again, it's one of these really big misconceptions. I think people that haven't been in a strip club or haven't stripped themselves just think that to be a stripper is to do your stage show and make it rain and you're going to have money chucked at you and it's all about that. And it's like, I can literally count on one hand the number of times that I've been tipped on stage in the UK. It just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. You don't make money out of doing that. It's used as more of a form of advertisement in the UK, which I'm just like, I'd rather just talk to a customer and hustle them and get them into a lap dance private room, because I just feel like that's more efficient than me doing free labor on the stage. It's the advertisement is there. Like, I'm in front of them in my lingerie. I might do a little bit of dancing while I'm up with them, like trying to get them to come into the private room. But at the end of the day, that's going to be more effective than giving away half my product on stage by stripping topless, you know?
Yeah, for sure. That's why dancers in the UK don't really want to go on stage, because it doesn't benefit them in any way, and it just uses up excess energy and time when you could be doing more money-making activities. And I think that's why when you're talking about the slower, more sensual side of stripper style, it's also because you kind of have to pace yourself. And when you're several dances privately, or even when you're spending time with a customer and talking to them, it's all about like the long game, and you have to really spread it out. It's not like on stage and you just do like one dance and you just like put all your energy out there. It could be, you know, you're doing a 15-minute dance or a half an hour dance, but it's not all dancing, it's talking as well. But, you know, making it feel like you're dancing forever.
That's so true. Like, I might turn it out a little bit if there's a big stag do and it's like, okay, it is worth putting on a little bit of a show. Like, I enjoy performing. I enjoy doing the show, but I just like it. I feel very bitter when I'm not being paid for it, I guess. I might, if there's a big group of people and I need to make myself stand out and it's worth me putting on a show, then I might pull out a trick. I might do some clacks. I might even twerk on stage, but I wouldn't pull out any kind of stunt in a lap dance room. Like you're saying, you might have an 8-hour shift ahead of you, and you could have 30-minute VIPs, even an hour VIPs. It's just like, you do need to pace yourself. You need to go slow. And I kind of feel like that it's not necessarily a better experience for the client, but it leaves them wanting more. If you just go all out and you give them everything and all the stuff, then they might not necessarily want to continue. So like that slow movement, it's just kind of more teasing, and I think it leaves them wanting a bit more.
Yeah, you want to drag it out as long as possible so you can make the most money as possible as well. So yeah, it makes sense. I don't know if we did have notes here instead of pound coins, if we would even tip then either, because we don't like to give tips.
It is not in our culture.
Because we're so stingy,
I mean, it's like that. There are quite a few clubs in the UK that have funny money where you can change up your English pounds or notes for like dancer dollars and coins, even like little chips. They're called chips, aren't they? Like in Spearmint Rhino, they're rhino chips. You can do that in quite a lot of clubs, but like you say, it's just not really in our culture to tip. And it's just the audacity for a dancer to ask a client to tip them. Like, I've had so many of my like US stripper friends go like, you should ask them for tips. I'm like, if we did that in the UK, I think, gosh, the British slander.
I know. I really remember when me and my partner were in New York and we went to a theatre. And we bought some like crisps and a drink. And then the guy expected us to tip him in a theater. I was like, what? And he was really annoyed that we didn't tip him. He was like really angry. I was just so surprised, because I like, you don't tip people in a theater. That's weird. So I just remember that. And that kind of showed the difference in culture and the expectations and what's normal.
Yeah.
In their kind of price structure. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so true.
The next one I wanted to talk about is table dance. Mm. What does table dance mean?
I've personally never worked in a UK club that has had table dancing.
I haven't either. No, I didn't really understand what it meant for a while.
Yeah, do you know what? It's just like kind of the whole dilapidation of the strip club industry in the UK, I guess. So I did work in a club that had table dancing listed on the menu, but we never offered that service. So they must have had it at one point. But I know there are a few clubs that have that American style table dancing, because that is very much an American thing. And yeah, I've never even seen it with my own eyes, but from what I've been told, it's where a stripper gets up on, it's in public, it's in the public strip club space room, and you get up on the table of the client that wants to pay you, and you just strip there in front of everyone. Just, yep, that's it. Everybody's there. Everybody can enjoy the product as well. That's why I'm just like, that's why it confuses me a bit.
Yeah.
It's there for everyone to see. Why would you pay for that when you could probably just sly on someone else's girl?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I wasn't sure what it meant for a while, and I thought it was like Coyote Ugly style, where you had to dance like above, so like on a table or like a raised it was like a pole on the table. And I thought, that makes sense, but I don't think that's how it is at all. From what I talked to other dancers, they were saying that it's even beside the table, just when on the floor of the club, and yeah, they'll be sitting down and you just dance beside them. I don't know if they go topless or they get fully naked, but I think a few dancers said that in the stripper style group, that that's what table dancing meant to them, like just a dance on the floor rather than a dance in a private space, private room.
That sounds far less dangerous than trying to dance on a table in a stripper heels. That would not be
no
for me. I need something to hang on to, like a pole.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, that's an interesting one, because we've both not really had much experience with that, but I've heard people talk about table dancing, so that's a kind of different one. I guess it's just mainly on the floor, like an on the floor dance rather than in a private area in the open.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which takes us quite nicely onto what is a private dance.
Yes, I love that dancing. Like, if you want to be a stripper, you have to love that, because that is the job, along with sales. But, so lap dancing. I mean, technically in the UK, it's not even dancing on laps, technically. Like, what the rules say, you should have a distance. I don't do my dances like that. Nor do many strippers, but...
Wait, I think you might have... I think I said private dance, but I think that's different to lap dance, right?
Because
I was going to do... Okay, because I was going to do that as a separate one after. Ooh. Okay, this is interesting.
Okay.
Okay, so I'll just quickly tell you what I think of private dance.
I'm excited. I'm going to learn something new.
Well, I know, like, in one of the first clubs that I used to work in, we used to do private dances. So they would sit down, and then you'd have a little, like, it's almost like a ballet bar, but like tiny, a little bar thing. You'd hold onto that, and then you'd dance like a meter away about a meter away. So it's a private dance in a private booth, but you didn't dance on them. And then I worked at other clubs where it's lap dancing, where you dance on their lap. Then it's like contact.
No, that's not been my experience at all. So in all of the clubs that I've worked at, you have a general lap dance room and then a VIP lap dance room. And what I've done and what I've witnessed other dancers do, and what I've been told by management as well, is you give lap dances in all areas. So whether it's, you know, that general area, it's like a little room off to the side of the main floor, or it's the VIP section, so like a curtained off booth as such, where it's just you and the customer. But yeah, no, that's so interesting, and that would work so much better, like Yeah, that's not been my experience in the clubs I've worked in at all. That's so interesting.
Oh, yeah. I worked in a lot of clubs that were like, you have to be a meter away, you have to be 3 feet away. And it was like hammered into you that you have to be like this specific distance away from them. And it was just called, because you couldn't call it a lap dance really when you were selling it, because it wasn't, you weren't touching them. So it was, yeah, a private dance. But
even even a lap dance isn't, if we're going by kind of what you're saying, definition wise and what I do in the club as well, it's not allowed. You're not actually allowed to make contact. It's in all the rules of having a sexual entertainment license, which is really, really interesting. Okay. Yeah, you're not allowed.
So you're dancing like around and on the lap, but not actually touching the lap. Is that it?
Yeah, yeah. And the distance is important as well. I did work in a club where he really strictly enforced that as well. And it was so hard to make money that way personally. It's just like, you're selling a lap dance, but it isn't a lap dance because you can't sit on them or touch their shoulder. Like really aggy when you were just like even out in the main floor and touching their shoulder like you would in a normal conversation with someone that you're discussing with. I don't know. It's just, yeah, I just found it really hard to work in that environment personally. But yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it is difficult because there will be some places that will be a lap dance, but it will be you're dancing in around but not actually touching. Mm-hmm. And then it's only like, what, an inch? And then there'll be dancers where they are actually sitting, grinding on your actual lap.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
It's kind of a very fine line between the two, and they might be advertised the same.
Yeah, I'm so interested about your experience with that and how you've had that division in your clubs. That's so interesting.
Because it kind of became a prop, that little bar thing. And then there was a bar like above us as well.
Yeah.
And like some of the taller girls could touch it and they could like do like turns and stuff. I was quite short, but I could jump and then I would like get it and then I could do tricks on it, like hang upside down naked and like do a little flippy thing.
That sounds so cool.
It was really fun. I never worked anywhere else like that. It was only one club that had that kind of function. But yeah, it was really, really fun. I did this one move where, so I was holding onto this bar and then I'd have my legs kind of in a straddle, an ankle on either side of the bar. And then I'd like swing naked. Ah! So then my vagina would be like close and then far. Close. And there was always one weird guy who'd always try to blow on it, always.
It's a pussy pendulum. I love it.
Yes, it's a pussy pendulum.
I want to do that.
I should have sold that as that name. It's like a pussy pendulum experience.
Who would say no to that?
I know. That's such a good name. I love it. But just talking to you, there's so many different nuances in what, you know, a lap dance is or what a private dance is. And it just varies so much from club to club as well.
It
and
really
the rules
does.
Have changed vastly over the last couple of decades. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's also, there are a lot of, well, I don't know if there's a lot of, but there are some contact clubs as well, which is technically illegal.
Yeah.
But there are definitely clubs where the customers are allowed to touch or touch certain parts like the waist or the hips and mm-hmm. stuff like that. I know they have that in Australia as well, where there's some like contact clubs. So that's, again, another layer.
I think that's really interesting as well, because I get, in my experience, I've had so many customers that have come in. They might not know much about strip clubs, but you know, no touching is plastered on most walls in UK strip clubs, but they expect that touching is a part of it, and some don't even ask. And it's just like, boundaries and consent, like, come on. I mean, I'm personally not okay with, like, I'll touch them, but I don't want them to touch me. And it's like, but at least ask first. And you know, there's other girls that will let them let you touch them. So, you know, just like
I think that was one of the hard things to navigate, is because there were so many different dancers doing different things and having different boundaries, especially if they come from another club as well. Mm-hmm. They might be doing a completely different rule, like set of rules in another club. They've come to your club, or they're prepared to do things that you're not, and then having to navigate around that with customers was always really, really confusing and difficult.
It is so difficult, because especially like if you're with a client and it's like, I don't want you to touch me, that's such a turn off for them for you to say that. So you have to like try and negotiate your boundaries in with trying to make them feel special and keep that connection between the two of you. And that can be really, really tricky. And that's something that you kind of learn as you go along while you're trying to like navigate your own boundaries and how you set that with a client. But it's really tricky.
It's like boundaries 101 that you learn when you become a stripper.
No one teaches it to you. And like,
no, I know.
You can go into that environment so naive, because I mean, there's no stripper handbook. There's no stripper course that you go on and you graduate and then you're a stripper. You're just kind of thrown into the lion's den, and you kind of got to make of it what you will. And I think, you know, most people go into the industry and don't realize that there's a lot of full service that happens. And it's like, oh no, it's just stripping. Well, actually it's not. You get a whole range of sex workers in those environments, even if it might not be, you know, legal. It's that environment that they feel safest working in. And I'd prefer to have, you know, I'm not full service myself, but I have no problem working alongside full service sex workers, because I'd rather them be there than out on the street trying to do it in like way less controlled conditions. And it's so much more dangerous, but it does make it tricky as well. And it's like, once clients cotton on that they can get more for their money and they can go to someone that's going to offer full service, then they don't want you anymore and as a non-full service sex worker. And that's just like, oh, it's a bit heartbreaking.
Yeah, I think it's good to think about it from the full service sex worker's point of view, that it is difficult to work and it's unsafe to work outside of that environment. Yeah, because I've always found it difficult to be working in such a mix of people doing different things, because it was never really out in the open. Like, this person's doing this person's doing that. It was all, you had to kind of like figure it out yourself. And it was, when you're quite new to it, that's really hard. And I remember being really shocked finding out that other dancers were doing full service. I was like, what? But, you know, I just didn't know. And I'm sure that a lot of newbies going into it don't know that. And that is something to be prepared for.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's just such a shame. It's not a shame. It's quite abhorrent that the laws and policies surrounding sex work in the UK, it's just like, because it you know, if the laws were set up in such a way, then, you know, full service sex workers could work in safer conditions, either in the club, if there's, you know, that in different countries you've got like strip clubs that might have different levels, so you can just go to a stripper for a lap dance or a private dance, or you can go to a stripper and have a full service sex environment, and it's amazing. Like, it's just more clear, and it's more clear. Or, you know, as a full service sex worker, you could go out and work in a brothel. That would be, again, it's just the way that it's set up in the UK, that it's just really hard to be a full service sex worker and be safe. Frustrating.
Yeah. I knew this stripper who, I think she was from Bulgaria, and she used to tell me that they'd work in pairs. So she was a stripper, and then she'd work with an escort, and they would work as a team, and she would warm them up, and then she would pass on the client to the girl, and then she would take them and, you know, do the rest. And it worked really, really well. And it sounded like a really good system because everyone got what they wanted. And
that's really
I thought that was really cool. I remember that story. I don't know if it's still like that now, but yeah, like something like that would be so much better where you can work with someone. It's just a lot safer and you can be clear about like, I'm going to provide this service and you're going to provide that service.
And clients know where they stand as well.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's very frustrating. Yeah, I hope things change, but it looks like we're heading in the opposite direction at the minute. So,
yeah, it's difficult at the moment because we're going through a little bit of an SEV purge, it seems like. And a lot of venues and strip clubs are being asked to close or having their licenses revoked. And it's quite sad, I think, because it seems like the strip club industry is very unstable at the moment in the UK.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of the old clubs that were once really thriving are not there anymore, or, you know, being closed down or being used for something completely different now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really sad to see. Like my local strip club, Spearmint Rhino Sheffield, was shut last year during the pandemic, and it's like I'll never set foot in there again, and I didn't know that was gonna be a thing, and it's just really heartbreaking. Like I won't have that to go back to, and so many of my co-workers and friends' livelihoods have been destroyed, and yeah, it's just pretty heartbreaking really.
Yeah, I feel like history repeats itself, and the similar kinds of thing happened with the burlesque industry, or the theatres just shut overnight and everyone was out of work, or the musicians or the comics or the bar staff because of like TV coming in and people weren't going out anymore and stuff like that. So I feel like with like what happens with burlesque, it's gone more into kind of pop-up events or nights or cabarets and stuff. We'll probably have that with pole and stripping. We'll have our events and nights that we put on for it. Not to say that there won't be venues for it, but I reckon it will probably be like that. But we can have a little pole renaissance, stripper renaissance, and put on these nights and curate it ourselves and have that control over it. I think that would be actually really fun.
I think what the problem that we're having, like with the death of the strip club industry, especially in the UK, it's just the unwillingness to adapt and evolve and change around current times, really. And especially like with club management, they're especially not willing to change because of the way that the strip club models work. They're going to get their money regardless because of the house fees that they charge dancers to work, which is crazy because really they're making their workers clients and making money off of their workers rather than actual clients that are coming in to use strip club services. So I personally think that's why clubs aren't changing the way that they need to be changing to, you know, give more opportunities to dancers and workers and to kind of, you know, cater to the culture that we have and to add variety and interest. But I just don't think management is interested in changing up the model that's working well for them. So yeah, again, very frustrating.
And everyone's going to lose out in the end as I think it's a shame there's not more kind of camaraderie between management in strip clubs and strippers, strippers aren't allowed to go into management roles either as well.
Yeah.
There's just a complete disconnect that is, you know, kind of ruined it really.
Yeah, it's a real shame to see. I do really think that, you know, if we were to just change and tweak things to, you know, bring clients in and kind of, like you say, like a pole and stripping renaissance, like it is so doable. It's just kind of the willingness to evolve and adapt to, you know, the current climate and what's going on. I don't know why we haven't had peep shows come back because that is so COVID safe.
I love peep shows.
Yeah. It's like, I want that to come back. I want there to be strip washes, like car washes with strippers. Yeah. Like, why can't, you know, there's so many COVID safe ways that we could have, you know, sexual entertainment services involved with that. peep shows, come on, you've got a screen in between the two of you, you can have a great time. It would be great.
Oh my God, peep show, that would be the highlight of many people's lockdown. Little trip out to the peep show.
Yeah, it'd be so cool. It'd be so good. But no, nobody's done that in the UK. And I'm just like, that is such a wasted opportunity. If I had the money to do it, I totally would.
The car wash idea as well, because the person can be in the car, windows closed.
It's perfect.
You do that anyway when you go and get your swab or you get tested. So yeah. Why not have a little car wash after?
It's perfect. It is ideal, and I wish someone had done that.
We need to make this happen.
Anybody out there listening, feel free to steal my idea, as long as you know I am one of your dancers, because I want to be involved in that shit.
You can get COVID tested and then get your car washed.
Oh my gosh, it would be so good. It would work so well. Vaccine and vag. Yeah. I don't know.
You can come. What do you think was your favourite thing about stripping?
Oh, can I say the money?
Yeah.
But no, do you know, okay, the money is a big thing, but you don't get this with every client. But most clients that come in, it's being worshipped. And it has done so much for my self-esteem. And it's just, you are showered with compliments constantly. And that's just, it's just a really nice thing to have. I really enjoy being sexual, and I love performing that side of myself for someone else. I think that's really a really special thing to share with someone, and I love to make that connection in a lap dance with a person. And it's so nice to like give something back and to make them feel loved and wanted and special. You know, they've made me feel special by saying all lovely nice things about me, but you know, I've made them feel special by giving a part of myself to them and making them feel something. And I love that. I really love the job. Like the money's good, but I love the job as well.
Yeah, it's just a really positive exchange of energy, basically.
It so is. Like, I think, you know, there's a lot of stereotypes that it's strip clubs are like really seedy and it's all about the sex, but it's really not. Like, you actually build human connections with these people, and like not everyone that comes into the strip club wants to even see you naked. They just want to talk and have that social interaction. And it's just, I really like the social side of the job. And yeah, I love that.
It's kind of like being a professional socializer. That's
a
really big part of the job. I used to always say that it was just being a socialite for the evening. Going back to what you were saying about money as well, there aren't really that many jobs where you get paid like cash, and like the feeling of having cash and that kind of instant gratification of money. I don't know, there's something about holding the money that you've earned that just feels really nice. And you don't really get that as much with other jobs, and less so now as we become a kind of cashless society, unless you're like a drug dealer or something. But I don't know, there's just something really exciting about I've this money and I'm holding it in my hands and I can feel it. Do you know what I mean?
It's tangible, isn't it? I love that too. I like that too, yeah.
Yeah, I miss that, like counting the money and,
spreading,
you know,
it on the bed and rolling in it.
Throwing it in the air.
There's been nights where I've come home and my partner's like asleep in the bed and I've just like thrown all the money at him. And he's like, Gemma, it's 5 a.m. Can you just not? Oh, no, you must make it rain on me now. Look at all this money.
I think everyone would be happier if they got paid in like flying cash. like first of the month, you know, just stand in your little cash shower and all your money that you've earned for the month just rains down on you. You just kind of like rub it about. You feel great.
Everyone would be so much happier as a society if we did that.
Like a Make It Rain Monday or something where you just had all your money just floats down on you. That would be fabulous.
It's great. It would be like a sexy version of, you know, in those game shows where you've got the wind tunnels of money and you have to grab at what you can get. Yeah. Be that, but sexy. Be great.
Yeah.
Massive entertainment there.
Yeah, I think everyone would love that. What challenges have you faced stripping?
Asserting my boundaries with clients is probably a big one, and also management. There's like I love strip clubs, but we need more rights as workers in these spaces. And I hate how exploitative the system is and how management can really take advantage of dancers in whatever way that may be. So that's it's really challenging to try and exist in a job that you love. And it's like, in some ways I'm fucking up the patriarchy, but in other ways it's like I'm still being a part of a really controlling system in that way. But, you know, that's the same with every other job. But it's just not having the rights as a worker is kind of hard to deal with. What I really found challenging was the waiting for clients to come in, the lack of clients. I just didn't see that many people more often than not in a given night. It's like, you know, you might be there from 9 o'clock and 9 p.m. at night and you don't see anyone until 1 a.m. and it's like you're waiting that whole time. And then it's like, you know, there's 10, 15, 20 girls that are like packs of hungry wolves, and you get one poor little customer come in, and it's like, it's kind of every dancer for themselves at that point, and it can be really competitive and quite bitchy and vicious, and it's just, yeah, really difficult working conditions, and you have to be quite cutthroat. You have to be really strong to work in that environment. You have to be so sure of yourself as well. I'm very sure of myself, so I never had a problem with that, but I don't like being that cutthroat. I don't like being mean to people, but yeah. It's a really difficult environment to work in.
Yeah, I just felt like I was too much of a diva to run over to some guy and beg him for a dance. Like, I can't deal with this. It's hard. It just got harder and harder. And I think another dancer I spoke to said that things really changed when lap dancing came in. And I think something to do with the house fees as well, because you were all in competition against each other. And before that, when it was all stage shows, it wasn't like you were competing with the other dancers. It was just you were all earning money together. Whereas when it was private dances, it became way more competitive. And that's when that kind of bitchy element came out, I think, as well, having to pay to work as well.
It's totally not helped by management either, because they're the one curating that environment by scheduling as many dancers as they possibly can to get all the house fees. It's like, it's not fair on anyone except the house.
Yeah.
They love it. They managers love it. But yeah, it's just like, that's, I've very much changed my attitude. That's why I'd never hate on my co-workers and my other dancer friends, because we're kind of all in the same boat, and it's not our fault that we're being pitted against each other. That's just what the club has done to us, and it's really frustrating.
I also found that in my experience it wasn't really just male management. A lot of the meanest managers were women. They were really, 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 yeah,
wow.
And lots of the places I worked, it was the the female manager was like a hard bitch. It was just, yeah. So it's not necessarily just about men either, I don't think. I think it was just a complete separation of the management in these venues not working with the dancers. I don't know why that is, if they don't actually respect them or they don't really see them as equal or what. But
tradition, laziness.
It's a shame. I don't know if it's like that everywhere, but in my experience it was always, you know, I never felt that sense of being looked after by management that much.
Me neither. No. That attitude, it's really frustrating, but I think it's because management kind of view us as expendable. There's a queue of other dancers.
Replaceable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, why would you look after us when you can just replace me for whatever reason? You don't like me, or you don't like my attitude, or, you know, I'm just... It that we're really easily replaced, and that's why they don't value us.
Yeah, I guess it can be quite transient as well. Not everyone stays in the same club, people going in and out, but they don't really set it up for like the long term. Like you don't get benefits for staying with them, or, you know, so it's not really set up for that either. Why is it so important to talk about stripper origins and culture in pole classes?
It's something I do all the time in all of my classes. My students just, they must be sick of me talking about the club, because that's what I center my work around. It's so important to talk about pole's origins, because the narrative surrounding our history, there's so much debate going on as to where pole has come from, and I can't believe we're still having these conversations, like people saying that pole comes from Malakam, and it's like, no, it comes from strippers, thank you very much. I can't believe we're having these debates, and it's these sanitized narratives that are being pushed forwards to try and separate the pole industry from stripping, to make it deemed more palatable and socially acceptable, which really doesn't do anything to destigmatize pole or stripping. It just kind of makes it worse for everyone, and is actually a big middle finger up to the founders of our industry. So it's so important to talk about stripping and where pole has come from, to, you know, truly respect the founders of our industry and to say thank you. Yeah, anything that's like othering strippers, it's just a big kick in the teeth. It's just like, you know, strippers have gifted their craft to you. The least you can do is say thank you, respect that, and, you know, advocate for them.
I would love to take us into the Love, Learn and Dream section, which is three questions that I ask all of my guests. What do you love most about your job, either as a pole dance teacher or stripper?
Oh, in both, I love the freedom to express myself, especially sexually, and to just like release that energy into the world and kind of just bathe in all my divinity and sexual glory. Like, that is so special, something that, you know, both of my jobs give me, and I feel really privileged to be able to do that.
And what is the biggest lesson you've learned along your journey?
That's a hard one. I've learned so much. It's hard to choose just one thing. I'd probably say the biggest thing I've learned is to be true to yourself and be your number one cheerleader, really. You know, people are going to say shit, and you've just got to back yourself all the way. Dance how you want to dance, be who you want to be, and just really, like, live in that truth, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, love that. And the dream question: in a world where you had unlimited budget, unlimited access to any venue or place, and no health or safety restrictions, what would you do in your dream routine?
I've been thinking about this so much. And as soon as she sent me that question, I knew exactly what I wanted. So I don't know if you've seen in the Magic Mike show, they've got this set called Wet Dream.
The water set. Yes. Ah, I know. It's amazing. This is so hot.
This is what I want, but with a few extras. So, like, I want, like, a massive – either – I don't care if it's a massive arena or, like, an intimate setting. And you've got, like, you know, that big water slidey stage, essentially, that's just, like, water. And I'd want, like, big bubbles and soap and glitter. Whether it's me on my own or other magical beings, I don't mind. I'll either be my own sex show or do it with other people. I'm quite happy to share this and it be like a water orgy. And like, I'd love to be able to like interact with the audience as well. So like, I want to be a sexy Shamu and get people wet in the front row with like a splash zone. So that is my dream. I'd love to just like get wet and wild and soapy and dance on the audience and just get all up in that. I'd love that.
Yes, that sounds like the best wet dream.
Yes.
It's been really fun talking to you today. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been rambling a lot, but it's been fun to talk about these things and try and like, you know, navigate terms and ideas, and you know, it's important to talk about.
Yeah, it's my favorite thing to talk to other strippers about their experiences, because we could just talk for days about stripping.
Yeah. Well, a lot of us love our jobs so much, and it's lovely that we can share that passion that we all have in common and talk about our stories and our experiences, because they're so varied and wide ranging, and that's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. It's everywhere. Everyone is so different, and yeah, their experiences are completely nuanced to wherever they've danced, for sure. Where can we find you online?
So you can find me on Instagram and Twitter. I don't use Twitter so much. I'm trying. At Gemma Rose Pole. I'm also on Facebook, Gemma Rose. And you can keep up to date with my classes and recordings on my Buy Me a Coffee. All the links are everywhere on my bio.
I will put them in the show notes.
Thank you.
Thank you to everyone for coming to listen today. Hope you've enjoyed our stripper chats, and we will see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining us today at the Pussy Parlor. If you're left wanting more, we have extra pussy episodes on Patreon, where you get extended interviews with bonus questions. Just search for Kitty Valor Patreon. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at The Pussy Parlor. That's pussy with an X, PXSSY, because we're not allowed the word pussy on Instagram. The tragedy. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star review. It really helps support the pod. I'll be back next week with a brand new guest. Stay filthy and stay fabulous. See you soon.